Libraries show us anything is possible by encouraging a love of learning, discovery, and exploration. This quote comes from Natalie Portman, one of SciAssets' most notable alumni and this year's honorary chair of National Library Week. We welcome you to listen to a rerun of Natalie's episode when we spoke to her on Turn the Page. Enjoy and happy National Library Week from us at SciAsset Public Library.
Welcome to Turn the Page, the official podcast of the SciAsset Public Library.
Hi, this is Jessica with SciAsset Libraries Turn the Page podcast, and my librarian co-host is...
Hi, this is Sharon. How you doing?
And our very special guest today is...
Hi, I am Natalie Portman from SciAsset.
Yes, you are. Welcome. We're so happy to have you.
So happy to be with you. Thank you.
Thank you. First things first, we are a library, and you published a book. You wrote a book that was published. And it is on the shelves in the library. So let's get started with that. The book is brand new and it's beautiful.
I absolutely adored it. It was so charming and it had this wonderful modern twist and just the right amount of silliness. So we just had some questions about your new book of fables and what sort of led you to write the book.
Thank you for saying all that. And I'm so excited that it's on the shelves of the library I grew up going to as a kid. That's like the biggest biggest accomplishment I can imagine and excitement I can imagine with this. If only the kids' bookstore also, remember the one that was in Woodbury Common? There was that one in that little strip next to the diner, next to where the diner is. That one was one that I also spent a lot of time just looking there. But that's no longer, but the library too was just such a seminal place for me. And I think one of the first impetuses for writing this came from a library. I used to take my son when we lived in Paris to the American Library every week for storytelling. And they used to read the fables to all the kids at the storytelling hour. And every, you know, it was all different authors for different fables, but the classic thing was that all the characters were male. And then when my daughter was born, I started realizing that she would get as gifts, like a lot of feminist baby books kind of things. And I was like, oh, this is great, but why aren't the boys getting it? And so I thought, what if we are doing something that is for both boys and girls? These things are clearly kind of neutral in terms of who they're, you know, fables or classic stories. They're relatively neutral in terms of who they're aimed at. And then just started with the first building block that like there's males and females and those in between in the animal kingdom, and that we don't need to overemphasize the male population for children, that we don't need to make them think that like females don't exist. And so just using kind of like the classic stories, the classic morals, but you know, relatively updated for our time. But really the big difference is just that it reflects the animal kingdom.
I have to agree. I am a mom of twin boys, and I found myself kind of early on, like you were saying, reading these books, and I was like, where are the females in these books? So I would start changing pronouns because I felt weird. You know, I mean, I am like, now in my house, there's my husband, there's my boys, there's one boy cat, and now I have another girl cat. So like, you know, I'm outnumbered in my house, but they should be aware.
I have two boys. Same thing. Yeah. We're outnumbered, Jess. We are.
We're totally outnumbered.
Yeah. And you're telling kids, by what stories you tell them, whose stories are important, whose stories are worth telling, and who to empathize with. I think, you know, when we're reading a book, when we're watching a TV show, when we're watching a movie, we empathize with the characters. We feel what they feel. We cry when they're sad. We laugh when they make a joke. We're with them emotionally. And if we're having all kids practice particularly male empathizing with males, then that is going to lead into later life practices too. So I think it's just like, it's hard, I think, to bring up any of these big issues in a really like serious way with kids ever. Like, I don't think it's really necessary, but I do think it's necessary to start from this young age of just saying like, everyone's stories are worthy and are worthy of being told or worthy of being felt. And I think that's my goal with this. And then, you know, I wrote it for my kids. It has a lot of the kind of like morals and values that I care about. And it felt like a document for them. And of course, if I'm writing it for them, hopefully it can be for other kids too.
My kids loved it. I read it to them as a bedtime story and they laughed and they like were smiling. They loved it.
Oh, thank you. That means so much to me.
I just wanted to point out the beautiful drawing of your children. And I, you know, I was zooming in there looking, and it looks like that they're reading RBG biography. And that got me really excited. I thought that was, it's such a wonderful illustration. And
I noticed that too.
Yeah. And is that your mother had drawn that of your children?
Yes, my mom is a great artist. And so she drew this portrait of the kids. And I was so lucky that she allowed me to include it in the book as a sort of dedication to her and to my children. And yes, they are reading the RBG kids book in it, which is a favorite. My son is reading it to my daughter. He's much older than her. So I have the luck of him getting to read to her. And yeah, it's just another lucky thing of girls and boys being able to look up to role models of different genders. So that, you know, again, that we have many types of heroes, many types of protagonists that we can have both kids identify with despite them being different genders.
How did you choose the fables that you included in the book?
Well, I chose, first of all, animal stories because I felt that animals as characters gave all kids equal access points. Like when I was a kid reading, I know I would always be like, oh, the brown haired girl is me, you know, which I think once you get away from physical description, then you associate with characters based on their personality or their qualities. And then secondly, I wanted to look for morals that felt resonant today still. So like the tortoise and the hare felt so meaningful because of course it's about like shutting out the noise and the distraction and, you know, focusing and sort of giving attention to what you love. The three little pigs about building strong foundations, which of course in our time of environmental change and crisis, we have to really be conscious of how we build and how we live. And then the city mouse and the country mouse felt very much to me about like rejecting superficiality for meaning, for true friendship, for where there's actually value. So those, I mean, that feels timeless, of course. So those were all stories that I could really glean strong like values from. Some of them I considered, and then I was just like, I don't really know that this is still okay. It's like, like a story. Like some of them do feel outdated.
Yeah.
There's a lot of that.
Yeah,
sure. You struggle with that a lot, right, in the library.
Sharon and I have both.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
I was children's for a while, and I know Sharon, you were children's with me, and now you're YA.
Yeah.
And there's many times, you know, you remember a book in a certain way, and then you open it, and you're just like, oh.
Oh, yeah. Like the illustrations or the content could just be, like you said, very outdated or no longer
appropriate. A little cringy.
Yeah, cringy. Yeah.
Cringy and outdated.
Yeah. There are some, however, that have still sort of, you know, that stand the test of time. And I wanted to ask, there was a series I loved when I was growing up, the Babysitter's Club books. And I heard that you were a fan and you had a little interaction with the author.
I'm a super fan. I read probably like, I think I had 250 books by the time I like kind of graduated out of reading it. And then I donated them all to the library, I think it was to SASA Library. I remember I donated them all when I sort of like, was like, okay,
they could still
like,
be on
I
the
had
shelf.
To like, I had to like quit, you know, like, yeah. it was such a big part of my life. And, Anna Martin, actually came to that, our local bookstore that I was mentioning, the kids bookstore, to, I don't know. I feel like you guys are younger than me, so it's maybe before your time.
Nope.
Actually, I was 2 grades older than you.
Oh, really?
So I graduated in 96.
And so I graduated in 97.
So we were all in the building.
You remember the kids bookstore.
Yeah.
Anna Martin came there. I don't know if you remember that. She came for a signing.
It was
like, I think 4th grade for me. And my best friend, Julie Shapiro, and I went and stood in line for like 4 hours to meet Anna Martin. And I had like a whole presentation prepared for her where I was like, there needs to be a Jewish character, a Jewish babysitter. Cause there were like Jewish kids that they, that they babysat, but there wasn't a Jewish babysitter. And I was like, I really wanted to like see myself on the page again, like representation matters. And also like, why couldn't I have, I mean, of course I did just identify with characters that were not exactly like me, but of course I wanted someone who was like exactly like me on the page. So that was very exciting. And then when I, worked on the kids book, my publisher, Jean Fiewel, is also Anna Martin's publisher, which was like a freak out for
me. Nice.
And so she sent me a copy of one of the books signed, and I lost my damn mind. It was like the most exciting day of my life. I mean, they really shaped my childhood in a lot of ways and shaped the way I see the world, I think, in a lot of ways.
So which character did you identify with the closest? I feel like I was a mix of Stacy and Claudia Kishi, because I liked that she would hide candy around her room and her crazy style.
Yeah, I feel like if you're into fashion, that's definitely a good intersection. I definitely like Stacy also, and I think definitely a bit of Dawn as well. I think like my whole like early vegetarianism was definitely probably inspired partly by Dawn. And you know, get a little, everyone's got a little of each of them. I think that was part of the thing that I realized when I grew up, I was like, oh, like maybe all of us are like a little bit of every babysitter. Maybe it doesn't have to be so discreetly one set of characteristics, but, it's really such an incredible series. And now the Netflix adaptation is great.
Yeah, so good.
And it's so fun to see like my son's age, like he and his friends, like it's like still relevant to that generation. So cool.
So the illustrations in the book are really beautiful. The Fables book. Did you pick the illustrator? I know sometimes they keep the author and the illustrator separate, but I know sometimes they do allow some input.
Yeah, Jana Mattia made the illustrations, and she's so talented. And I did, so basically when I wrote the book, I sent it to them and to my publishers, and then they gave me some options of illustrators. I kind of gave them the guidance of what I wanted, what I was hoping for with something quite classical, but with a good sense of humor and a lot of personality in the characters, but kind of really classical drawings. And Jana's work is so, so gorgeous and so full of character. And so, I mean, there's like little jokes that she puts in. My daughter loves like finding the little kind of hidden secret things, like the little bird stretching next to the tortoise, or those pages where she kind of shows like different steps of process, like when the pig's cooking and there's like, you know, six illustrations of the pig on the same page. So she's got an incredible talent. I'm so lucky that her art accompanies the writing in the book.
It's absolutely a perfect combination. And just to let everybody know, the book is available. You can, if you're going to purchase it for the holidays, which we highly recommend because it's beautiful.
Great holiday gift idea, sure.
Yes. I mean, you know, we say go to libraries, but it's a great gift, and we always
like something you can reread over. Yes. That's the Thank you know you. That's what makes it special. We really enjoy it a lot.
And check out the library.
Yes, but yeah, bookshop.org is always what we recommend. Like if people are looking to purchase books, because they support local bookshops, which is really cool. So may I ask you, do you mind if we talk Syosset?
Of course, please. Actually, my best friend from Syosset is in the same city I'm in right now, which is the best.
There are some standard questions we ask people who've graduated from Syosset for these Syosset specific episodes. Did you go through elementary, middle, and high school in Syosset? Mm-hmm. I know the answer to at least two of those.
Right, high school.
I went to the last year of Southwoods. I was in eighth grade. And then I went to Syosset High School before. Okay. We only moved to Jericho, really. We lived in Jericho, but we're Syosset School District. We only moved there when I was 9. And then I went to the Jewish school. I went to Solomon Schechter till 7th or till 8th grade. I transferred after 7th grade.
We always like to ask if you remember, like, as far as like Syosset hangouts go, a favorite diner or bagel location.
Yes. Bagel Master, obviously. And also I forget what it's called, but we called it the BRD, the Big Red Diner, the one that's on, that intersection at like Woodbury Road.
On Parade, right?
On Parade.
On
yes.
Parade.
Yeah. There you go.
We just called it the BRD.
it's really funny because there's this running thing where
it's still there.
I know. People are either like Celebrity Diner or the On Parade Diner. And then there's the Bagel Boss people and the Bagel Master people. So it's always very funny to see whose bagel place
wars between these two sides.
It's true because somebody we interviewed last year, Kathleen Kim, she works now on Sesame Street. I was like, oh, some people say Bagel Master. And she's like, no. They're fine. But it's about Bagel Boss. So it's always very funny to us. And then there used to be another diner, which is now a Walmart. And somebody reminded us of that. And we're like, oh, no, that's not even there anymore. So you have. Yeah.
Walgreens. It's a Walgreens.
It's Walgreens. Yes. You're
okay.
Right. Not Walmart.
I know what you're talking
it's
about.
Walgreens. Yes.
Yeah. The whole sort of, you know, the way your career trajectory sort of went is a little bit different than some of the other people that we've interviewed for the podcast, because many of them sort of came into their, you know, their fame and success after they graduated. And so we were just kind of curious, you know, if you wouldn't mind talking a little bit about what it was like currently, you know, when you were still in high school and, you know, you already sort of started your career, and how that was sort of a different experience, and how maybe the experience of that before the internet, a little bit about that and being in Syosset when that happened.
Yeah, I think I was really lucky that I was in high school before there was like social media at all. And certainly before camera phones, really before phones, like no one had cell phones when we were there. I mean, I didn't get a cell phone personally until I went to college. I didn't get a computer until I went to college. So like, I mean, we had like a family computer I could work on, but like, I didn't have my own. So, it definitely was a different environment, and I was definitely able to be much more private. I mean, kids like were aware of that I was acting also, but it wasn't the same level of like, you know, people could take pictures of you like when you didn't realize and then post them online or something. And yeah, I mean, I feel like that really let me have kind of like a pretty normal high school experience in terms of the way people treated me. It's such a big school that I felt like also, I don't even know if it was kids, but like, I remember being really upset at graduation. There were like, someone was like selling the video of our graduation and selling yearbooks and stuff.
I heard about that.
And that made me feel really like upset. Cause I was like, oh, I felt like everyone just treated me normally and like just a regular person. And then someone's like trying to like, you know, profit off of my privacy at the end. But I was like, okay, so one parent decided, you know, it wasn't like it certainly wasn't like a friend or a classmate or something. I was like, you know, it upset me for like an hour. And then, you know, like, okay, obviously, you know, whatever. So yeah, I feel really lucky. And there was one year, I mean, my junior year was like the crazy year because I was in a play while I was in high school and like commuting back and forth and doing half days on Wednesdays so I could like go do a matinee. And that was really awesome because that the school like allowed me to do that and helped me figure that out and everything. My guidance counselor from then is still one of my like best friends.
Aww.
Like hanging out with her all the
time. That's awesome.
Yeah.
Very cool. So I know we might have had some of the same teachers. I know obviously Mr. Collier was one of the ones we mentioned. Did you have Madame Caracciolo for French class?
I loved
her. She was
fantastic.
And actually
I ran into her a couple years ago at the ballet. It was so fun. She was there with her daughter. It was still like 20 years later. So wild to see her like out of the classroom.
Right, right.
You know, that feeling of like. Seeing the teacher out of the class, but she was so awesome. And like, I also feel like she laid like foundations for my life. Cause my husband's French, my kids are French. Like, I'm like the reason I have like any ability to communicate with any of my family is because of her.
That's so special.
That's amazing.
She was such
I remember, now Mr. Chipotine, he's still, in the Syosset School District. He's now the assistant principal at HBT, is that correct, Jess?
Yeah. I can't recall if he's the assistant principal at HBT or at the high school. I know
he was a social studies teacher at the high school, and you had him. And I'm just going to ask about a specific thing I remember was watching an interview. I think it was maybe David Letterman, and I thought you might have mentioned him, but maybe not by name, but you did talk about sort of a crazy teacher that you had. And I was curious if that might have been him.
I don't remember that.
You don't?
I don't remember. No, I don't remember what the story was.
Yeah. I mean, to be fair, we've had, you know, a lot of us had funny stories where he would get up on the tables and just like he was very animated. So whether or not it was or wasn't him, he might have just said it was anyway, because that was part of
it. Like,
yeah, but
I don't remember, but it's possible. Yeah, I definitely had him.
Yeah. Yeah.
We all did.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
He was and Ms. Watson for Japanese. I don't know if you take her.
No.
Also, I remember like the awesomest, such a great earth science teacher. What was her name? Who was so great. She would like get up on the table and demonstrate stuff. And
Ms. Capitella?
Yes.
Oh, Ms. Capitella. We actually kept in touch with her and she's doing great. And yeah, she's so much fun.
She's such a great teacher.
Oh,
so many great teachers.
Yeah, we had a lot of great teachers.
Yeah,
I think that's one of the things that everybody remembers is that there were just so many supportive teachers, so many really good teachers that just kind of went above and beyond.
Yeah. Yeah. And I remember I remember my like bio teacher and my chem teacher were like but everyone was great.
Yeah.
Very cool.
Very lucky school to be at.
Do you ever get back to the area?
Oh yeah, all the time. My parents live nearby. They've moved since I was growing up, but they're still in the area. And I'm back all the time.
Oh, great.
Very cool.
Well, Well, if you ever, you know, once this whole, you know, pandemic is over, please come visit the library. It's a lot different than it you know, used to be. We have a bit of a makeover. It's much bigger.
I would love to.
Do you plan on writing another book?
I would love to. I don't have like a particular plan in place right now, but yes, I would love to, particularly because this one is really aimed towards kind of my daughter's age, which is 3.5. And my son is 9. So I feel like I need to write something for kind of like older reader for him that's more in his world.
No, I was just, when you said that, my children are the exact same age difference. So I was just like, it's a very rare thing to have such a split, right?
It is. We just met another parent who has kids the same age, but she has 2 in between.
That makes sense.
You have 4 kids. Then
Right.
Yeah, you might have a 5.5-year age difference, but unusual to see for sure.
Yeah.
Just the 2. That's cool. It's a good age difference.
I think so too. I think they kind of, there's less competition and less sort of sibling rivalry. Yeah.
As somebody whose kids are a 30-second difference in age, I can tell you there is tons of competition. The closer in age they get, they compete for everything.
Yeah. Well, you know, pros and cons to everything. Yes.
Of course. All right. Well, I wanted to thank you so much for doing this. This is
thank you. A
huge deal. We're always rooting for you every time we see you anywhere.
Yeah.
Thank you so much. And I am always, always thinking about home, and I love the library so much and so grateful for you both, you know, keeping that energy alive and thriving, and can't wait to be back and visit.
Well, come back and visit for sure. So once again, this was Jessica, my librarian co-host was.
This is Sharon.
And our special guest was.
Allie Portman.
And we are going to close this chapter of Turn the Page.
It's time to close this chapter of Turn the Page. Join us for the next episode.